case for argument is Hall versus Sheehan, Mr. Morrissey.
Good morning. My name is Thomas Morrissey, and I represent the plaintiffs in this case. The plaintiffs in this case are current and former pretrial detainees at the Cook County Jail. The plaintiffs in this case are challenging the prolonged, excessive lockdown at the jail, which occurs over weekends.
So, now, what is your conception of the standard for these pretrial detainee abuse cases? What is the standard we apply, we should apply?
Well, we have Ms. Koss, that was a pretrial detainee.
Just answer my question. What is the standard we should use to decide these pretrial detainee cases?
The standard should be is that whether or not the practice was excessive in relation to the need to conduct a search of the jail, and two, whether or not during the lockdown did the jail fail to provide basic human necessities to the women. What the plaintiffs are alleging...
Well, I don't really understand your statement of the standard. Right? So we know what the Eighth Amendment standard is, right?
We're applying the Bell standard in this case, Sharon.
Well, what is that standard?
The Bell standard says, basically, that if there is not... If, in which we concede, there is a need to search... tiers for counterfeit.
I'm not interested in the tiers. I would like a general statement. We know that for Eighth Amendment, you know, I have to
the standard is
be
the 14th.
Deliberate indifference to
right.
the safety of the prisoners and so on. Now, well, what is it for these pretrial detainees? Is it the same or
it's different?
Since they haven't been convicted, is it a lesser standard? Is you're under a different constitutional amendment?
Well, there is a lesser standard.
What is it? Can you state it in a sentence?
Yes, it's the due process 14th
Well, what is it? For goodness' sake,
the due process. Would say that if the restriction is unreasonable or excessive, then the jail practice is unconstitutional. In this case, what we're saying is that the lockdowns occur on Friday afternoon, shortly after 1:30 in the afternoon, and they continue well on into Sunday evening.
Now, is it clear that, I mean, the major argument I thought your state was making, or the city, whatever it is, Cook County, was that you've got leakage of people between these tiers. So if someone in another tier isn't locked up, he's going to, you know, rush in and take the contraband and so on. And you, I think, deny that, say the tiers are sealed, you can't move freely between them. So is that clear, or
is that an
issue for trial, or what?
It's actually clear from our second amended complaint. Charles Fasano is the director of the John Howard Association, and he monitors conditions at the jail. Mr. Fasano is well aware of the physical structures in Division 3 and Division 4. What Mr. Fasano said, that once the tiers are searched, there's in the upper tier and the lower tier are searched, there is no possibility that contraband can be passed to another cell. Or to another
is
tier.
Is a tier a floor or what?
In divisions...
What's a tier?
A tier is a housing... Is a separate, segregated housing unit. It has a interlocked door, which is the only way in and out. Two doors. There's a day room, and then there's a steel door, and then there's a cell blocks.
So you're saying people are confined to the tier unless they get through this door?
That's correct.
Which is monitored or locked or something?
That is correct, Your Honor. That, especially in Division 3, which houses inmates that are seriously medically or physically ill, there is no way possible to pass contraband from one tier to the other. And that's also true in Division 4. What Charles Fasano, the monitor...
I actually need to take you in a different direction, which
certainly
concerns appellate jurisdiction. The notice of appeal was filed well over 60 days after the district court's judgment. It was well over 30, since your time is 30. And so I wonder how we can review this decision. And let me tell you what the problem is. You filed what you characterized as a Rule 59 motion, But the Rule 59 motion was filed, by my count, more than 10 countable days after the district court's opinion, and therefore doesn't extend the time to appeal. So it's not clear to me that there is anything properly before us.
That is not correct, Your Honor. December 25th was a legal holiday.
Yes.
December 26th was declared a day in which federal employees were not required to go to work.
Well,
it also references
the court was closed, but Rule 26A4 defines the word legal holiday to include Christmas Day, but not to include days on which the court is closed. There's a distinction in the rules between the court being closed on an intermediate day, which does not add to the time, and the court being closed on the final day of a period, which allows the document to roll forward. But your Rule 59 motion was filed on January 7th. The court was not closed then. It was not closed the day before January 7th. So I don't understand how one can add December 26th without directly contradicting the rule.
The president declared December 26th a day when all non-essential, non-defense
employees... I don't see what that has to do with the rule.
Because what the president did was he referenced that executive order to an order back in 1971, which clearly talks about a holiday. Also, the district court, the circuit court in D.C., was faced with a very similar situation, and they found...
Yes, it was, and so were we. We were faced with it in a case called Latham against Dominic's Finer Foods, and we held that December 26th is not a holiday for purposes of that rule.
That was not the holding.
You're effectively asking us to overrule Latham.
We are not. That was not the holding in Latham, nor was the plaintiff in that case was pro se. The case went forward.
What does that have to do with anything?
Well, perhaps the issue was not properly raised by the pro se plaintiff.
If you think it was not correctly reasoned, you could ask us to overrule it. That I understand, but it was decided.
Well, it was not. It was dicta in the case. The case proceeded. Charles Fasano, the monitor at the jail, looked at the practice and procedures in regards to the...
What does that have to do with jurisdiction? Is that it? Your position is basically we should overrule Latham.
No, my position is that Latham didn't stand for that proposition. It was just dicta, and that the circuit court, the D.C. Circuit Court, addressed that issue in Wasson, and they decided that it was a legal holiday, it should be considered a legal holiday, and they considered Latham, and they said it was not the holding. Specifically,
what is the name of that D.C.'s case?
The D.C. case is Mashpee, a tribal council versus Norton.
Thanks.
Sure. Can I continue?
Sure.
Okay. Mr. Fasano analyzed the lockdown situation at the jail, and he found that it was an unreasonable and exaggerated response to the need to conduct a search. What he found was that after the searches of the tiers were completed, there was no reason to continue lockdowns, that the lockdowns in that case violated all standards, correctional standards. Mr. Fasano further found that during lockdowns, because the jail does not have guards to protect the women who are in the cells, that women get injured and they suffer great mental distress. Mr. Fasano personally is aware of women delivering babies during lockdown and women having heart attacks. Now, during the lockdowns, as I said, the guards are not present when the women are confined in their cell. The physical structure of the tier is such that the guards' posts are up at the front door where the interlock doors are. There is two separations between the guard stations and where the women are locked down. There are two steel doors. When the women are back in their lockdown cells, they're not able to call out or ask for protection from the guards. Now, Division 3 is the division, as I mentioned before, which addresses people that have medical needs, people that are suicidal, that have substance abuse problems, or pregnant. In Division 3, there are only 6 housing tiers. There are 2 tiers to each floor. On each floor, Mr. Pisano said that it's virtually impossible. There's no possibility that contraband could be passed from one tier to the next. And Mr. Pisano said that in Division III, that 3 to 4 hours is the maximum time it should take, using the same number of guards that they use to search the tiers. The facts and the evidence in this case, as shown by the plaintiff's Third Amendment complaint, shows that all of the searches in Division III are conducted on Friday afternoon. And yet, the women remain in a lockdown situation for an additional 45 and 50 hours. But the plaintiffs contend that when the guards are not present, or can they neither hear nor see them, that they're subject to being attacked in these crowded cells by their cellmates. In addition, after they're attacked or when they're in need of medical care, there are no guards there to provide them the fundamental protection required under the
Bible. In the event we reach the merits, my question about that is, why is that a ground for an injunction as opposed to a suit by somebody who says he or she was not adequately protected by the guards? And the normal rule is there's no tort without an injury. And instead of speculating about what injuries will occur, people can bring a lawsuit if that happens.
Well, injunctive relief is to prevent the injury from happening. The plaintiff in this case was Helen Koss. And during a lockdown, Ms. Koss was attacked viciously by her cellmate for about 10 or 15 minutes. And there was no guard there present to stop the cellmate from attacking her.
Yes.
Furthermore, she did not receive any medical attention.
One might think that an award of damages premised on the lack of attention by the guards would accomplish your goal, right? Let me put it a different way. It is logically distinct whether there is a lockdown and whether the guards are alert during the lockdown to protect people from attacks by cellmates. Right? One can be locked in and have alert guards and so on. It's not clear to me why one should take the second potential problem, soporific guards, as a reason to enjoin the lockdown.
Well, because I think the facts you're unfamiliar with, in the sense that the women are structurally set way back in the cell blocks, where even if the guards are attendant in the tier, they can't hear or see them back in the lockdowns.
That's a distinct problem from whether the prison is locked down. One can easily imagine a rule that says while the prison is locked down, guards must be in a position to protect people from attacks by cellmates. Right? Isn't that an available doctrine or rule?
Well, certainly. But in the case, the practice, the common practice and procedure at the jail, which we're alleging happens, the guards are not present or cannot physically hear or see them. So those are the facts which really are presented in the well-pled Second Amended complaint. Now, in Division III, the women are not provided adequate protection, nor are they provided medical care. They're locked down for 45 to 50 hours after the cells have been searched. There was no set of facts before the district court to make the decision whether or not this was excessive. All that the district court found was that the searches of tiers for contraband was reasonable. The district court didn't take the next step, look at the allegations in the complaint, and see what the plaintiffs were complaining about. One, that there was substantial evidence that 45 or 50 hours was an excessive period of time. And two, that the women were not provided their basic human necessities, protection and medical care. Our case is very, very similar to the case in Bell versus Sheehan. In Bell versus Sheehan, the plaintiff was a AIDS patient. He was hospitalized. There was a round-the-clock 24-hour guard present at the bed. But in Bell, in addition to having a guard there, the sheriff had him shackled to the bed. This court found that shackling the person to the bed was an excessive and exaggerated response to a security interest. What this court said is, on a motion to dismiss, that the plaintiffs had alleged enough.
You know, why don't you save your minute for rebuttal, Mr.
Thank you, Your
Honor.
Marcy.
Mr. Puigis? Lucius?
May it please the court. Good morning, counsel. My name is Steve Pushis, and I'm here representing Sheriff Michael Sheehan, the Sheriff of Cook County. This is a case that was dismissed on the pleadings, and I submit it is one where the plaintiffs have essentially pleaded themselves out of court. And if I could explain briefly.
So what do you think is the standard case like this?
The standard is under Bell, Your Honor. And specifically under Bell, you look to see, first of all, if there was an express intent to punish by virtue.
I don't understand. Why is punishment relevant in this kind of case? It's not an Eighth Amendment case.
Well, my understanding is, Your Honor, you
can't. What if they have no intent to punish? They just don't want to hire guards, so they just dump people in the jail. And a year later, when it's time for a trial, they look in, see if anyone is still alive, and pull them out and have them tried.
Well, then you would be getting into the deliberate indifference on staffing issues.
My point is, I don't understand what punishment has to do with anything, right? I'm just giving a case with no intent to punish. They just don't want to bother with guards, so they just dump these people in and take them out a year later for their trial. Now, that clearly violates something, doesn't it?
Well, it would violate the Durand consent decree, Your Honor.
Oh, forget the consent decree. I'm talking about the constitutional standard. You don't think that's unconstitutional because there's no intent to punish?
There is an obligation to protect inmates.
Right, so we're no longer talking about punishment. We're talking about, now, what is that obligation to protect? To protect inmates. How do we articulate that?
The defendant was aware of a specific.
Why do you have to show awareness?
That's my understanding of what the court requires.
But how do you relate that to the concept of due process? If a person is deprived of liberty without due process, what difference does the state of mind of the officials who do the deprivation matter?
Well, under deliberate indifference, as I understand it,
why is deliberate indifference the standard?
Because it's the Eighth Amendment standard.
It's not the Eighth. Well, this court has said in the context of pretrial detainees, deliberate indifference is the appropriate standard.
Why is it appropriate? These people haven't been convicted.
I understand that. They can't be punished.
But they can't be. It's not that they can't be punished. They can't have their liberty taken away without due process of law, right?
Yes, sir.
So, what is the standard? Why is it you think it should be deliberate indifference?
Well, in Tesh, this court addressed.
Why do you think the standard should be deliberate indifference? Why is that the sensible standard?
Why
isn't it, as your opponent said, is this a reasonable restriction on these pretrial detainees? If there are reasons in the management, I thought what Bell versus Wolfers emphasized was that the managerial needs of the jail are entitled to significant consideration.
Yes, Your Honor.
So if they have a reasonable managerial need for this kind of lockdown and so forth, then fine. But if it's unreasonable, then it's unconstitutional. Well, what's wrong with that as a standard?
This court has said.
What's wrong with that as a standard?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
What is wrong with that as a standard? I'm asking you, what is wrong as a matter of logic or common sense or something with saying that the restrictions that they. That the jail imposes on these pretrial detainees have to be reasonable restrictions. They have to be reasonably related to the management needs of the jail. And if they're not, if they're gratuitous, so on, if they're excessively restrictive and dangerous and so forth, then they're unconstitutional.
That's my understanding of what the standard is under Bell.
Okay, great. So we're agreed. So now the thing that I find troublesome is if it's true as alleged that these tiers are sealed off from one another, I don't understand why these people have to be why someone in tier A has to be locked in while tier B is being searched if there's no way that the B's or the A's could get into each other's tiers.
Well, again, the plaintiff has pled himself out of court by virtue of the allegation made in paragraph 41 of the complaint. Paragraph 41 of the complaint, if the court will review, references the presence of inmate workers on the tiers during the course of weekend lockdowns. In fact, it was an inmate worker who allegedly brought to the jail guard's attention the fact that there was a dispute going on.
Okay,
in one
so
of
where
cells.
Is this now? In
paragraph 41 of the Second Amendment complaint, Your Honor.
Is this in your brief, in your appendix, or what?
In our separate appendix, yes, Your Honor, the Second Amendment complaint.
And it's paragraph what?
Paragraph 41. There's references to inmate. There's a reference to an inmate worker present during the course of the lockdown on the tier who brought to the jail guard's attention the fact that there was a dispute going on in the cell. I submit that the presence of inmate workers is a reason why you can't let these individuals out of their cells.
It says it took approximately 10 minutes for an inmate worker to get the correction of a correctional officer?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where was the inmate? How do we know where the inmate worker was or who he was or what?
The inmate worker, by definition, had to be within the tier in order to bring it to the attention of the jail guard in the interlock. The interlock door is secured. The only way the jail worker could get into the tier is through that interlock door that had to be
opened. But how do we know the inmate worker came from a different tier? How do we know it wasn't an inmate worker from the tier, from Koss's tier?
There's nothing pled specifically in the complaint where
right.
that inmate worker comes from.
Right. So how can you assume that this inmate came from another tier?
Because I would have to assume facts beyond what's alleged in the complaint, Your Honor.
Well, you're making a fantastic argument. You're saying that paragraph 41 shows they've pleaded themselves out of court by saying that the tier, you know, are porous and you've got an inmate worker from another tier. Now you say, no, 41 doesn't say where the inmate worker comes from, and you can't say either because that would be going outside the pleadings.
Well,
so why haven't you just pleaded yourself out of your argument?
Well, Your Honor, we know that food has to get delivered from outside the tier. That's done through
We don't know who delivers the food from the outside tier. Maybe it's delivered by the guards. How should we know? You jumped the gun by moving to dismiss the complaint. We don't have the facts. All we have is what's in the complaint. They didn't plead themselves out of court.
I submit they did, Your Honor.
No, they didn't, because you've just shown that we don't know where this inmate worker came from. We don't know whether he came from another tier. We don't know who feeds these people.
I submit that based on...
You can submit what? Based on what?
Based on what this court wrote in Tesh versus County of Green Lake, in Antonelli versus Sheehan, and what the Fifth Circuit wrote in Hamilton, that what you have here are de minimis deprivations, allegedly.
I don't think it's de minimis. You have some mad person ripping your hair out or because there are no guards within hailing distance. That doesn't sound de minimis to me.
Well, in my understanding, Your Honor, of the law, you have to demonstrate that the sheriff knew of a substantial risk of harm to that specific
Now we're going
inmate.
Back to this question of the Eighth Amendment. You're back with the Eighth Amendment deliberate indifference standard. After you agree that the issue is reasonableness, is it reasonable for these people to be locked in their tiers when another tier is being searched? That's really what the case is about. Is that reasonable? What's the point of that? I don't understand it. Unless the tiers are porous, which we don't know from the complaint.
If I might, I don't believe anyone is disputing attempting to maintain security at the jail and preventing the interdiction of contraband.
Precisely, and that's why you have these interlocked doors between the tiers. Now we don't know whether these doors are really locked and who's milling around inside. We don't know. It's not clear from the complaint. You've admitted it's not clear in the complaint.
If
you want
I
us
might,
to
Your
go
Honor,
out and think, and you want us to take judicial notice that the food is being carried in by inmates.
Searching for weapons and contraband is reasonable.
That's
related.
Not the issue. Of course they can search. The question is, do they have to lock down the whole jail when they're searching one tier? That's the question on which the which you don't have any facts because you jumped the gun with your motion to dismiss.
If I might, what you're saying here is that this was an exaggerated response under Bell?
Well, that's what's alleged.
Well, I submit that what they have pled in terms of an exaggerated response, if you look at and compare what is alleged here with what was alleged in Tesh, what was alleged in Hamilton, what was alleged in Antonelli. Antonelli involved affirming a dismissal on a 12B6 motion involving a lockdown that was allegedly arbitrary in nature, where the resident had to sleep on the mattress on the floor. I submit that this is...
Wait a second. I don't understand. A lot of people sleep on mattresses on the floor. I don't know what that's about. And the question isn't the lockdown. They're not challenging the lockdown. They're challenging the sealing of these people in their cells for 50 hours for no reason. And whether it's reasonable or not depends on whether there's traffic between these tiers, which we don't know.
I submit it's reasonable. They're going to be locked in their cells at night. They're going to be locked in their cells during...
Yes, of course, but it's one thing to be locked in your cell at night. It's another thing to be locked for 50 consecutive hours with no guards around. You have these people tearing each other's hair out and giving birth, and it's bizarre business, really.
Well, again, the allegations about giving birth, that's in the Third Amended Complaint, which was never granted leave to file.
Right.
If I might.
You might want to spend some time on the question whether we have jurisdiction, which is the first question in these appeals.
Your Honor, we did not specifically address Latham in our brief, and I would be glad to submit some supplemental letter on that at the conclusion of the brief or at the conclusion of the arguments. I submit under Latham this court would not have jurisdiction.
Would have jurisdiction, but only over the motion to reconsider viewed as a Rule 60B motion rather than, but we wouldn't have any jurisdiction over the original decision.
Right. And on that ground, Your Honor, specifically, plaintiff was given four shots at the apple in terms of pleading an amended complaint. And the question then becomes whether or not Judge Zagel abused his discretion in refusing to allow the filing of a third amended complaint. And I submit under the applicable standards he did not. That would be the only question this court would have jurisdiction to address. Because under Latham, this court would not have jurisdiction to address the propriety of the original dismissal on the motion to dismiss.
I find it most puzzling. Both sides are aware of Latham. Both sides are aware, obviously, that there's a serious problem, potential problem with appellate jurisdiction. And both sides ignore it in their briefs and hope we will ignore it, too. This is not the behavior we expect from members of our bar.
I understand, Your Honor. But on the only issue that this court would have jurisdiction, I submit Judge Zagel did not abuse his discretion. Because plaintiff had four opportunities to plead. In Figge, this court said, post-judgment motions to amend or alter, or for leave to file an amended complaint, rather, without any explanation, denial would not constitute an abuse of discretion. Here, plaintiff doesn't offer any justification for why the alleged facts in the third amended complaint could not have been pled earlier in the second amended complaint because the report of Sheila Vaughn,
I don't understand this at all. It is established in this circuit, because it has to be established in light of the Supreme Court's decisions, that as long as you can imagine any fact consistent with the complaint, the litigation proceeds, that will allow the litigation to proceed. You don't have to plead the facts in the complaint. Your approach, and indeed the district court's approach, appears to be one of fact pleading, that since they didn't get a particular fact in till their third try, it doesn't count. The Supreme Court's doctrine is if you can imagine a particular fact, it's treated as if it were there all along.
No,
so
what
difference could it possibly make that not until their third try did they plead fact X, when you never have to plead facts at all?
Well, the fact that they did plead facts in this case, specifically, for example, the argument that there was only that these lockdowns last 50 hours at most demonstrates, and I submit, that it was not excessive. Especially when you give deference to the decisions of the prison administrators. The Constitution does not require that the quickest way, the most expedient way, or the least alternative means be employed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Koussis.
Thank you,
Koussis. Mr. Morrissey, how much time does he have? 1 minute?
Thank you, Your Honor. In regards to this court's reasonableness standard, we allege that Charles Fasano found that it was unreasonable to monitor at the jail in regards to the prolonged lockdown. In regards to the issue of supplemental jurisdiction, we filed a supplemental jurisdictional statement when we received an order from Judge Wood. And Judge Wood indicated that in regards to the timeliness of the motion to alter or amend the motion to dismiss. That was filed on March 10th, and it was supposed to be distributed to this panel. It's our contention that the lockdown was unreasonable, it was arbitrary, and was purposeless. Because, as this court is aware, each tier is individually sealed, that no contraband can go from one tier to the next. Therefore, to keep people in a lockdown situation, especially women that are injured, that are mentally ill, in a crowded cell for 40 to 50 hours, when there is no purpose for it, when the jail conducts these lockdowns, which the Third Amendment complaint actually, Exhibit A, actually has the jail's own documents, which show that the tiers are searched on Friday afternoon in Division 3. And it also shows that in Division 3, they remain locked down until about 5 or 6 p.m. on Sunday evening.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you to both counsel. Next case for argument.